Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 1:08 p.m. and that is Pacific Summer Time, and today is July 16th. I thought that I would start off today by talking about commodities, because there's a lot of interesting things happening in terms of the price action and the consistency of charts. So when we look at, for example, Brent crude, it has broken down to a new reaction low, and it has almost completely unwound its overextension relative to the trend mean. Well, the last time it did that was in February, and that was that bigger pullback that we saw in February was an inconsistency relative to that impressive advance that we'd seen in the latter half of 2017. And now the big question is whether it is going to find support in this current area, because the moving average almost now coincides with the peak that we saw in January. So this is a rather interesting area, because if oil fails to find support around the $70 area, it will be the largest reaction that we've seen since at least the first half of 2017. It will have failed to find support at the previous high, so that would suggest that past resistance has not become future support, and then it would be below the trend mean, and that would be the first time as well since the beginning, well, really since the middle of 2017. So this is an important area for the oil price. And we know that there is a supply response, because Saudi Arabia is, on the one hand, playing ball with the USA and increasing supply, but it is also doing so in order to try and damage its regional competitor, which is Iran. Iran is, I think, campaigning rather strongly to maintain the supply curtailment in order to help to support prices. And at the same time, that refineries in Venezuela are shutting down because they don't have enough supply, which is an incredible indictment of the situation in that country, considering that it has larger reserves than Saudi Arabia does. So we're at a critical juncture for the energy sector represented by crude oil. Well, it's also worth keeping an eye on the West Texas Intermediate price, considering that the spread between the two has been coming down. But we can also see that WTI had broken on the upside, and it is now unwinding that advance. It's a failed upside break. And when we look at that on the weekly chart, well, we can also see that it has tended to dip more into the underlying ranges. So the big question is going to be the extent to which it can find support around the $63 area. Well, when we just look at oil, there's a lot to say, but there's a lot more commodities that have got rather interesting chart patterns. If we look at an individual contract for soybeans, well, we can see very clearly how much prices have fallen from 1,050 to 850 in the space of 6 weeks is a pretty accelerated decline. Well, then if we go back and look at a much longer term chart and on the continuation chart, we can see that 800 cents has been an area of support on multiple occasions since 2008. So it's not as if China is going to stop consuming soybeans. Soybeans are as much a staple to the Chinese diet as wheat is for just about anywhere else. And I think it's hard to imagine that China could remain contain social cohesion without soy sauce and tofu. So this is an important characteristic, that there has been a lot of panicky selling going on. But the reality is that Brazil is going to run out of soybeans, considering the stockpiling that's going on, and the USA has got plenty of them. So there is going to be a way found to ensure that China has enough soybeans, and prices right now are cheap. Now, when we look at corn, well, China does not import nearly as much corn, but that hasn't stopped the price coming down. And when we look at that on a weekly basis, well, we're at the lower side of what's an evolving four-year range. It doesn't mean that the price can't go lower. We have seen prices test the 300 cent level, but it's at 340 now, and it wasn't so long ago that it was just above 400. So I think we're getting back into interesting territory with a number of the grains and beans. And then against that background, last week we had a limit up day for cotton, and it has continued to hold the region of the trend mean. So there has been a clear progression of higher reaction lows since the end of 2017. It is now testing the region of the peaks that we saw back in 2013 and 2014, but this continues to look like an evolving bullish scenario. And then when we look at the sugar price, well, what's going on in Brazil is obviously going to have a major impact on what happens with sugar. And they continue to have this trucking strike, and those truckers are they're protesting because of the removal of subsidies from the gasoline price and generally high operating costs right across their patch. But the sugar price has come all the way back down to 300 on that UK contract, and we've seen an upward dynamic. It hasn't quite yet broken above the trend mean, but the price is almost half of what it was at the end of 2016. So there's been a lot of bad news has been priced in here. And if we take a look at the US contract, we have a very similar story, and that and it's more than halved since the end of 2016, but it is coming back towards this 10 area, and 10 has been an area of support since at least 2008. So we're back at interesting levels here as well. Then when we look at the Arabica coffee, it's a very similar story, that the price is back coming back towards this 100 level, and at 100 has been an area of psychological support for much of the last decade. But it has also been an area of support historically, and there have been occasions, not most notably in the early 2000s and in the early 1990s, when and indeed in the early 70s, when prices got to 50. But those are the exception rather than the rule when we look at the longer term chart. More often than not, we've seen that prices have bounced from 100, and we're really not that far off that level now. And the Robusta contract does not have quite as much history as the Arabica contract since it was reformulated, but the price is back around 1600, and this is an area where we saw a rally off the lows 2 weeks ago. So I think that we're getting to a position in a number of the soft commodities where a lot of bad news has already been priced in, and we perhaps don't yet have the catalyst for a bounce, but it's probably not that far off either. So I think this is a sector that's worth keeping an eye on over the course of the next few weeks, and indeed the next month or two, because this has been a very clearly accelerating decline. And then when we look at the industrial metals, well, the LME Industrial Metals Index has broken down in a pretty dynamic manner over the course of the last 3 weeks. This is a massive reaction against the prevailing trend. This had been a reasonably consistent uptrend until 3 weeks ago, and now this is looking increasingly like a type 2 top formation. So I think that that is rather important, because this is the proverbial bolt from the blue. It is being led lower by the copper price, and copper was reasonably steady in here today, but excuse me, nothing in the way of down, excuse me, upward dynamics. Then the big question is the extent to which it's going to be able to bounce. But I think it's worth taking a look at some of the other industrial metals. So, for example, when we look at aluminium, it has also pulled back in a very dynamic manner, but it is coming back towards this $2,000 area, which has been an area of support over the last year. Then, zinc prices had been doing reasonably well, but have really pulled back in a very dynamic manner over the course of the last 4 weeks. And now they're at the $2,500 level, which had been an area of resistance all the way from 2010 to 2016, and subsequently then an area of support. So I think this is a rather important level for these industrial metals as well. And nickel prices, which have been the clear outperformers in terms of the industrial metal complex this year, is now right in the region of the trend mean. Well, nickel is, I think, in many respects, an electric vehicle play. So it does have a somewhat different background, but it is still an industrial metal, and it has not been immune from the selling pressure we've seen right across the sector. And even here, we have a short-term oversold condition. So think that, again, in the industrial metal complex, a lot is going to hinge on how people view the relationship with China. Well, China's stock market has also accelerated lower, and it is by far the largest growth driver for commodity demand. But what we saw last week was at least a nascent evidence that support is beginning to come back in the region of the 2016 lows. We have not yet seen upside follow through, and that suggests that it is going to take some additional time, and it probably requires some form of catalyst. The point I was making last week is that part of the reason why you've had this underperformance in Chinese stocks over the course of this year is not only because you have a deficit of governance and declining standards of governance generally, but that they've been leaning on the shadow banking sector, and now they've banned US dollar loans. And the question is, how are highly leveraged operations going to fund themselves when their avenues for credit have been cut off and the delinquency rate is rising? So we simply just do not know what the nominal default rate is in China, because we've never been in this situation before. There haven't been any defaults. And that means that this is a clear, known unknown. And until we have some form of answer and we know exactly what the administration is going to do in terms of rising defaults, I think that the Chinese markets are going to probably remain under pressure. It's going to require some form of institutional catalyst to reignite investor interest. Then, if we look at some of the US-listed Chinese technology companies, the administration in China is actively trying to encourage these companies to list CDRs, Chinese Depository Receipts. That has not yet happened, but it has the potential to act as a bullish catalyst, most particularly for companies like Alibaba, Baidu, and JD.com, where they have done really rather well from listing in the USA, but domestic Chinese investors have had no opportunity to buy these shares. So if they do go ahead and list their Chinese CDRs, well, we can anticipate that we may see a pop on the upside for these companies. But so far, there isn't any sign that people are pricing in that eventuality. And what we've seen with Chinese regulators over the course of the years, not least because of the enthusiasm and the massive rally that we saw in 2008 on enthusiasm about the Hong Kong Shanghai Connect, that they tend to go slowly. I think that the market has been pricing in that potential that they may go a little bit slower than they were initially signaling with regard to the release of the CDRs. Well, if oil prices do continue lower, and this is a rather big question, well, that's likely to be beneficial for India. Now, the Nifty index is somewhat overbought in the short term, so it is due some consolidation, and it does appear that we are getting that with today's pullback. Now, the Indian rupee has been stable in the region of 69 to the dollar, but certainly nothing in the way of clear upward dynamics for the rupee, and this continues to look like a consolidation for the US dollar. So, and there is the background potential is that Modi will attempt to buy the election, and that is going to result in a less secure fiscal position. So, that's the pressure that could come to bear on the rupee, and I think that is why, on a currency-adjusted basis, Indian investments have not been keeping up with Wall Street in particular. Now, when we look at what's going on in Europe, today the dollar was a little bit weaker. So, the euro continues to stabilize around this 116 area. But not in a particularly dynamic manner, and the internal dynamics of the range are very clearly biased by the Big Dahmer dynamics that we've seen. This continues to look like a distribution below that peak that we saw in the first quarter of 2018. And a sustained move back above 120 is going to be required to confirm a return to demand dominance beyond the short term for the euro. The reality is that I think, at least to my opinion, the European economy is not yet ready to dispense with quantitative easing, but the ECB is going to do it anyway. That suggests that they may have to move back into the market at some stage. But any time that we get a little bit of weakness in the euro, the stock market rallies, and every time we get a little bit of strength, the market pulls back. Well, the euro was a little bit firmer today, so European stocks had a difficult time sustaining their rallies. And that was particularly the case for the banking sector. And the banks were not able to hold their rally. This has been what so far looks like a distribution. I think you would be hard-pressed to consider that this is a consolidation when you still have the progression of lower rally highs. There was an accelerated decline in May, and the price has been pretty feeble in terms of its rally so far. So, and the big question is whether the banks index can sustain a move back above 115. Well, there is, I think, at least one bright spot today was Deutsche Bank's results, and the share has bounced back above 10 euro. So that has now broken the progression of lower rally highs since the beginning, since the end of December. So as long as Deutsche Bank is holding that €10 area, I think we can give the benefit of the doubt to some additional upside. But there is absolutely no denying that the company has got some extraordinary challenges in front of it. So this is still a very risky environment for the European banking sector. And I think that is a blanket statement that there are significant challenges right across the board. Well, when we look at the pound and the euro, we have a rather interesting environment because back in April, the pound was breaking out amid enthusiasm that from investors at least, that the UK would remain closer to the EU. Well, the pound has been pulling back since then, and it's coming back towards the lower side of its range. Theresa May tends to be flip-floppish in terms of her commitment or otherwise to Brexit, and that is beginning to take a toll on her administration. Of course, we can look at this range since September of last year, which has been comparatively inert, for one of the currency pairs that has been most volatile over the course of the last few years. And we can say that ranges are explosions waiting to happen. And when this one eventually breaks, it is going to do so in a dynamic manner. Well, we've already had a big decline, so it would require some significant new news to really suggest that we're going to see a significantly lower pound. But what we do know is that this is a very taut environment, and that the potential for a surprising outcome cannot be discounted. So that range and the fact that the rate has been so stable over much of the last 9 months is not an indication that it will remain so. Rather the opposite, that we can anticipate that there is going to be additional volatility in this currency pair. Now, when we look at what's going on in the USA, US 10-year Treasury yields have steadied somewhat above the 2.8% level, but were not able to hold the move all the way through the entire session. And earlier on today, the two-year pushed on to new recovery highs for the yield, but closed below the 2.6% level. This continues to represent a reasonably bullish chart. And when we think about what the outlook is for the yield curve, it's probably that we're going to see some form of inversion at some point, either late this year or early next year. And that will be a lead indicator for the next recession. We're already starting to see the argument evolving in much the same way that we had back in 2006, that it's going to be different this time. Well, it might be. It might be different this time. But until it is different this time, I'm going to consider that this is still a reliable lead indicator. The simple fact of the matter is that the banking sector in particular does well when it can, and its entire business model is predicated on its ability to borrow short and lend long. And if to borrow short, they are paying more than they can receive for lending long. Well, that impairs the ability of the banking sector to lend, and that restricts credit into the economy. And if you're restricting credit into the economy, well, that's not good news for an economic expansion. Mostly economic expansions at this stage in the excuse me, in the cycle are predicated on liquidity provision, and anything that restricts liquidity is a problem. Well, then you have the fact that interest rates are rising generally. So when we start to look at the high yield spreads, we can already see that the US one has broken out, and that is against a background where Wall Street has been outperforming. But European high yield spreads have been trending higher since December, and high yield spreads in China are also trending higher. And that is where we have some rather acute risk. So if we're thinking about epicenters of risk, well, then we are moving eastward from China. It's China, Europe, the USA. But if high yield spreads are rising, it does point towards tightening credit conditions generally. Well, then the question is, well, where are we in terms of the clear outperformers? And the Nasdaq was in mildly negative territory in here today, but not in a dynamic manner. And the most important point is that it has bounced from the 7,000 level, and 7,000 had been an area of resistance previously. And as long as it is bouncing from 7,000 and holding the region of the trend mean, we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. So there is the realistic possibility, and it's something that we should give due consideration to, that we could see accelerations higher, particularly from leading sectors like technology, before we get the next recession. And I think that is the, I think, potentially even the base case, as long as the Nasdaq is holding its breakout. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.